Welcome back to Biff, a podcast about superhero TV shows, movies, and more that's in its 100th episode. My name is Dan Morin, and I am joined on this 100th episode by my good friends. John Moltz is here. Hi, John. Welcome to episode 100.
Dan, I would do 100 episodes, and I would do 100 more.
Oh, wow. I think I heard a song about that once.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's gonna pop more when we do 500.
That's true. That's true. Yeah. Guy English is also here. Hi, Guy. Welcome to the 100th episode.
I'm glad John is writing jokes for episode 500 already.
You got to get in there early, man.
Yeah, I mean, like the Flash. I expect this show to go on forever.
Ruining jokes for episode 500 is what I'm doing.
Well, no one will remember 400 episodes from now.
I certainly won't.
Yep, that's for sure.
One of the hilarious things about this being episode 100 is that it is not. I don't know how many episodes we've done if you include the Speedy Arrowcast.
That's true.
This is like the successor.
Yeah. Somewhere I have a number, but I can't remember what it is.
Plus the ones Guy never actually published.
Do you know what? I do want to. I actually made a note to say nice things about you guys, but I did, but I lost that note,
I've got a
new mental note now, kicking them out in my head.
I noticed, by the way, that you have to write a note. It's not just intrinsic. You have to remind yourself to do it.
Well, I jotted down random things to say, you know? Not about you.
Oh, but sure.
I didn't.
To us?
I didn't want.
Around us?
Spent a few hours on the internet.
In your proximity?
You'll be surprised what I came up with.
I didn't want the 100th episode opportunity to go by without spending a little moment saying nice things about you, but apparently
so much for that.
We got off on the wrong foot.
That's unwanted in this show. They say 101 is the hardest one to do because you feel like you've accomplished something at 100 and then you're sick of each other.
We're checked out by the end of this episode. That's for sure.
So I was trying to find out when we started. I think it's 2015. Let me look at my podcast right here. February 13th, 2015.
Okay, so six plus years.
Yeah, and we started with Canaries, which was
season 3. It was like halfway through. A couple episodes in. It was not the season 3 premiere.
Wait. Well, you're talking about Speedy Arrowcast.
Okay. All right. For those who are new to Biff, we began covering Arrow.
Let's explain the rating system.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to.
Episode 100. It's got to get done.
You got it.
Maybe we revamp it after 100.
Oh.
Like it's getting a little long in the tooth, you know?
I think maybe you're right.
Off the cuff, like with no preamble or earlier discussion? Yeah. What does that look like?
We'll spend a week thinking. Do we introduce it this episode?
I don't know what it is, so that will be pretty impressive.
I think maybe we stick with this. This will be the swan song, right?
I agree. Yeah. So we've got a week, and we'll try to figure it out. And you know what, dear readers, send us a letter and suggest ratings.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, or tell us why we need to keep the current one if you feel strongly about it.
Yeah.
Weigh in,
which you really should not.
It's the dumbest thing ever. I'm glad we're going to keep it though, because we'll see how I rate something later on.
Interesting. Okay. I'll look forward to that.
Yeah. So I mean, yeah, it's been 100 episodes of this show, which it seems like a lot, but on the other hand, on the same side of the coin, I don't know what the saying I was going for was, but at the same time, I mean, you know, two years worth of a show a week is about 100 episodes, right? So I remember when we first spun the show off, like when I was talking to Jason Snell about like moving from the Speedy Arrowcast to doing a standalone show. And I remember because it was in San Jose at the Apple Worldwide Developers Conference when he and I were having dinner. I was like, maybe we should, Arrow's gonna end. Maybe we should spin it off into its own show. And here we are, 100 episodes later.
Yeah, laughing all the way to the bank with each and every episode.
I don't know what bank you're going to, but...
Well,
I thought it was the poorhouse, but okay.
I thought, same thing. I mean, I go to the bank because sometimes they still have free candy. You know, you just like take out like a lollipop or
sure.
something.
Well, you got to eat.
Yeah, I know. There's no money in it for me, let me tell you that.
Yeah.
The shirts are selling.
I was going to say, I'm not John T-Shirts Moltz over there.
Yeah, you're getting a cut of this.
Nobody wants to see behind the curtain.
Why? Why? He's literally doing all the work. Like, I just discovered to myself via text to both of you guys earlier today that I do nothing. I just show up. Barely have any notes.
Well, you won't take the money because of some Canadian reason. So
yeah, well, at some point.
We'll talk about it later.
I don't want the money. I don't care. Like, whatever. I told you to buy me a beer or something. We'll go to dinner.
A lot of beers now.
Oh, good. I'm glad you have a lot of beers. It's fine. When we go out, maybe, I don't know, take a small portion of mine and put it into, like, some kind of Biffy budget.
Biffy budget? Biffy.
And if we ever get together, we'll have a dinner on Biff. But yeah, okay.
Most importantly, t-shirts, just so we know.
Sure.
Most importantly, you do all the work for the t-shirts. So why would I get a cut?
Because we advertise them on the show and it's our show, man. Okay. But I don't know. Whatever.
I appreciate it. It's big.
I love you guys. See, I said something nice.
Aw.
Oh, that's nice. Okay. I feel weird.
I broke the rule.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. It doesn't feel right, does it? We can go back.
No, it just doesn't.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, are we going to do a show or are we just
sure,
gonna,
we should. We can do a show. Yeah. We can do a show.
I don't know. I mean,
we've been doing a lot of back padding. Yeah.
Yeah, right. That'll be just an hour of this.
Yeah. Also, I was not jazzed about this episode. So,
all right.
I got that impression.
Loki has come to an end, but we are still continuing to cover Legends of Tomorrow for the next few weeks. And we'll be covering, coming up, the Marvel What If show, as well as probably Stargirl in some way or fashion. We haven't quite figured out our entire schedule yet, but that's what's on the docket. But for the next few weeks, we're purely a Legends of Tomorrow show. Well, we might do another segment today. We'll see. But let's start off by recapping the most recent episode.
One thing I want to say before we jump into it is I don't know how many people watch Legends, but I'm going to guess it is a smaller number than the number of people who watch Loki.
Fair.
But I do know that when we were doing Arrow, especially, you know, the later seasons, we had readers tell us that they don't watch the show, but they do listen to our podcast about it.
Sounds like a special kind of torture, frankly, but you know.
It's a good way to catch up, I guess. You know, stay. It's still an hour though, but you could do it while driving.
Yeah, they just it made me feel happy that people actually enjoyed us being stupid for an hour. So that's nice. And I wanted to take the opportunity to say something nice about the readers.
Yeah.
Only because they like us. If they don't like us, well.
If they don't like us, why are they readers? I don't
know. Well, I mean, I'm sure there's hate readers. Like,
I suppose so. Mostly for me, but yeah.
Next to John. Anyway, get to work, man. Do the recap.
Okay, well, nobody.
All right. We're here to cover the most recent episode of Legends of Tomorrow, which is season 6, episode 10, entitled Bad Blood, and John Moltz will be doing the recap.
That is correct. So John Constantine is trying to get the map of the Fountain of Imperium, not the map of the Fountain of Imperium, out of Crawley. And he says that he gave it to a banker named Noel, who happens to be a vampire. John gets the map from her, and she leaves him a free trial of a potion that will give him magical abilities. So kind. On the ship, they're trying to get Gus to sleep. Spooner says Gus is having growing pains before she storms off. Turns out the map is in an alien language, so John gets her to translate it. The fountain is in Spain, and only the worthy can drink from it. They head to Spain in 1939. There's a rebel named El Gato who's survived multiple attempts to kill him, so they think he must have drunk from the fountain. They find him at a bar, and John manages to convince him that they're not fascists, but he won't tell them the truth about the fountain. They sneak around back to find the fountain, and they find El Gato's nephew, Fernando, who Spooner can telepathically communicate with because he drank from the fountain, which is alien. The fascists arrive, and they capture the bar, looking for El Gato because Hitler is very into the occult. I don't know if you knew that, but it's come up.
Yeah, I mean, I played Wolfenstein, Spear of Destiny.
Sure, yeah, right. Yeah. That's probably, I guess before that it would have been... your first inclination that Hitler was into the occult would have been Indiana Jones, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. So the fascist leader shoots Elgato, and the nephew runs out and heals him. Spooner gets captured, and John almost drinks the potion, but then he gets the idea to impersonate a priest with orders from the Vatican to find the fountain. He pretends to create a link between Spooner and Fernando, who tells his story about an angel appearing to tell him to drink from the fountain to save his uncle. But then we got a fight, and Spooner, Fernando, and John escape. John explains to her why he needs magic, and they head to the cave where the fountain is, but it's dry. John suggests pushing the magic out of Fernando and into him. Fernando says he'll give him his powers if John will help him find his mother. The magic comes out of Fernando, but it goes back into the fountain. The fascists catch up with them, and John tells the other two to flee while he takes the potion and sort of very trippily kills the bad guys. Back at the house, John huffs some more potion and says that, Spooner says that she will tell Zari he's doping, but he magics her so that she'll tell the legends they were successful. And instead, then Noel shows up and trades him more potion for Crowley's painting. Dun, dun, dun. And the B plot. Lita tries to get Mick to come to terms with his pregnancy. Mick feels guilty because he left Kayla behind. Lita pretends to be pregnant, and they push Gus through a portal to get to the med bay because Gus has grown very large now, and they get Mick in there, and he gets examined, and he gets his first look at the babies in his head. And aww, it's a touching moment.
So cute. Yeah.
Yes. And for some reason, Gary, Eva, and Sarah show up at the very end.
Gary was there all along. Gary was there all along. Well, he just lost his glasses.
Yeah, but yeah, the actor was not.
Do you think he's in that suit?
I do not.
I think it would be funny if he were.
I assume what? it's some sort of money thing, or is it just like too many characters?
I don't know. I have no idea. Maybe in COVID stuff. Who knows? Like, take your pick.
Right. Yeah, yeah. I just thought it was odd because I just expected, okay, those three actors are not going to be in this episode whatsoever, and then they walk in at the very end.
Right. It's funny. I think in some ways whoever is in that suit does a nice job of capturing his body language, because he is like, somehow, even though he is in a suit, he's still kind of recognizably Gary.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just assume it's not him, because otherwise they would use some sort of makeup that makes it apparent that it's him. But
right. Like around the eyes.
It's
like
probably a union job.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. One thing I don't know. I was kind of zoned out watching this, but one thing that I did sort of weirdly consider was I wondered if they'd filmed the stuff with the guy in the painting earlier. I don't know why. My mind was all over the place when I was watching this for some reason, but it occurred to me that, like, he's a guest star, right? What was his name?
Matt Lucas?
Matt Lucas, yeah.
He just does the voice, though.
I guess so, yeah. So they don't need to... I don't know. Why. Like, honestly, ADR. This episode made me so nonplussed that I just did not... I started thinking about other stuff. Like, I was putting the dishes away, filling the dishwasher, making breakfast.
I will agree. I did multitask while Nazis. Watching this one. And yeah, it was not... It's not the strongest outing this season.
I watched it twice, so I suffered.
Oh wow!
Okay,
for you.
All right.
Yeah.
Oh, in order to take notes,
yeah, in order to take notes. So I made this. So this is a bad one to watch with Karen, because it was like she knew that I needed to watch it, and I was like, well, we could watch it, sure, if you want to watch. And
it's so embarrassing.
She pretty much checked out like about 5 minutes in.
It's so embarrassing when you drag your loved ones into
you get a bad one, like
yeah. Because there's plenty.
That's like super. It's not super bad, but
it's not. Yeah, it's just kind of. It's all right. I mean, like, there's a couple. The stuff I liked more was like there were some fun visual gags with the crew while they're trying to catch Gus.
Yes.
Right, and all their hair is like standing up, except for Nate, of course, who is perfectly coiffed, which I really enjoyed.
I really like that. Yeah, because he's Man of Steel, and his hair is like just
It's like part of his superpower, I think.
And they do a Wonder Twin powers activate joke.
Yep. And I mean, in one of the slightly weird bits of this episode, it is as we point out, the original Zari, as we are reminded in the first couple minutes. And she barely gets anything to do in this episode.
Yeah.
She's in for two scenes.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, that didn't sit well with me either. I don't know. Maybe I was just.
I imagine she'll stick around for a little bit longer.
Yeah, I think she's gonna
come and go. So I don't. I mean, that didn't really bother me per se.
It didn't bother me. It was just like, oh yeah, that's great. I like this character, and then it's like, oh, but she's not really in this episode.
She's not really in this episode.
Oh well,
right. Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean,
and I think the I don't know, the Spain thing didn't. Well, first of all, is Spain's not that wet, right?
I don't know. Maybe in 1939.
I don't know. I mean, I've never been to Spain. The only thing I know about it is they do all the desert shots for Doctor Who there. The American desert shots are all done in Spain.
Mm.
So I generally think of Spain as fairly dry. And they're clearly walking through the Pacific Northwest, of course. And it's just odd.
At least they shoot it at night.
I guess that was the
kind of get away with a lot
excuse. Yeah.
Yeah, I think I like the alien stuff, like cute baby goes bananas is very, you know, that's very much a Legends, not trope, but, you know, like it's very in their wheelhouse.
Also, they just dumped the alien somewhere random, so they're probably going to have to deal with that at some point.
Yeah, are they, though? Because I don't know if they're going to deal with Kayla. Like,
oh, I think they are. I think that's going to come back into play.
Maybe. Yeah, I hope so.
It could. Yeah, but that does seem weird, right? Like, you know, because their whole thing was like they have to go around and pick up these
aliens through time,
and now they just dumped one.
I think they will have to deal with the consequence of that at some point. Maybe not next week, but I think before the end of the season.
I think it's also possible they'll just leave. They'll just leave it.
Fair.
Yeah, it's not like they're not really. I mean, they're crossing their I's and dotting their T's on this show. It's not like they've got a massive plan, you know?
Right.
I like Mick. That was not bad.
I mean, there are a couple of, I like that.
And I like his daughter a lot.
I like the actress. She was on Lost in Space.
I loved the bit where she tricked him into going to the med bay. I thought that was fantastic. I enjoyed her a lot. I enjoyed that she has like a rapport with the crew, and she kind of takes the time travel thing in stride now. Like, I thought that was very cute.
Yeah, but I liked his admission of what was eating him.
Yep.
And
literally,
and I also I also like John's admission of like why he's so attached to magic.
Yes, that was a good scene. The one where he talks to Spooner about why he needs it, but it also is cut with this whole, through with this whole thing of like fundamentally he's kind of like. His character is a bit of a junkie, just in general, right? The cigarettes and danger and all that. Like, that's a fundamental, I think, part of Constantine.
Yeah, in the comics, it's very obvious. Like, he's basically a jackass.
Right. Yeah. But he's also an addict to a certain extent, you know?
Yeah. You know, which is, I mean, they're not correlated, obviously, but maybe they're correlated. It's not, who knows? I don't know what I'm trying to say, and I realize that I'm stepping on a landmine about stuff, but it's certainly not uncommon in media to see addicts act in irresponsible and rash and selfish ways, right? Like, that's sort of the nature of it for especially harder drugs and that kind of stuff. And the magic for Constantine has always, at least in the comics and here, been played as his heroin, effectively, right? Like, he's a train spotting kind of guy that with magic rather than, you know, crawling into a toilet.
Yeah. I'm glad there aren't any.
That was a weird
I'm glad the baby in this movie was not crawling on the ceiling.
Yeah.
this show.
Yeah, right. At the same time, I think it's interesting. Like, sometimes these storylines, I think, can fall flat when you get into too much of that, like dealing with the addiction parables and stuff like that. I like Constantine enough as a character that I'm willing to sort of go with it, but that bit at the end where he like basically erases Spooner's memory is rough, and I thought, you know, also seemed, made me wonder if they were setting him up to be kind of a villain, you know, in the back half of the season. Not necessarily as like a big bad, but like as a, you know, he's got kind of a villainous plot there. Yeah,
and I mean, that's another common addiction thing, where due to their selfishness, or, you know, the character's selfishness, their own objectives are counter to the objectives of the greater whole, and you end up in this weird conflict of interest kind of thing. I would like to see that play out, because I I like Matt Ryan. I think he's great as Constantine. I don't like the magic stuff. Like, I thought that that was why this episode didn't hook me. You know, like, I made my coffee, and I was ready to go sit. I can see the TV from my, whatever. You don't need to know my apartment layout, but I...
let's go to the map.
Yeah, save that for the bonus episodes.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, we'll have, like, well, you know what? This is why this should be a YouTube show, is I'll just show you around my, like, lifestyles of comic book podcasters with Robin Leach. Rest in peace.
Yep.
Magic didn't hook me. I expected to be more into the episode, and then when it gets all magic-y, I lose interest fast. So I thought it was more of a me thing, like a personal taste thing, rather than the episode being bad. But, you know, hearing you guys sort of confirm that it didn't do it for you either,
yeah,
I guess makes me feel like a little bit better. Like, I wasn't, I thought I had done a bad job appreciating something. And, you know, part of the gig here, it's not really a gig, is like, we want to be enthusiastic and positive about things. Like, that is, that's right, why we rarely give bad ratings to anything.
We're not one of those shows that just craps and everything.
Picks apart.
Yeah. No, and we don't even
want to. Let me tell you about the 7 plot holes in this episode.
Well, even, you know, if there's stuff that we don't
there was
like.
There was something that we crapped on a lot, and then we just stopped talking about it.
Mm, right. Fair. Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I think that's fine, because people want to listen. I mean, screw the leaders. Sorry, guys. You've been with us for 100. I've lost interest in you. Taking you for granted now.
Boy, this
but,
is...
yeah. But no, it's a fun break in our day to talk about something dumb, right?
Yeah.
So that's fun and exciting. And this, sadly, I think the thing with magic for me...
You mean irrespective of the readers.
Yes.
Yeah.
Don't suck up to them. Don't suck up to them so you can get more t-shirt money.
I'm addicted to t-shirt money.
Yeah, that's your heroin. The thing with magic is that it has no rules, right? So, you know, it's not like Star Trek has rules.
Depends.
Like, but
depends,
it's got, on, it's got the, enough.
Depends on the property.
Sure, yeah. I mean, if you right. there's rules, in, certainly in RPGs, and all, I mean, it's all modeled by computers, so yeah, there's rules. But, like, in a show like this, it's kind of wishy-washy, and you certainly can't anticipate the rules going in. You know, like, when the Enterprise raises shields, you're like, well, if they get shot enough, those shields are going to break. Like, you know that that's the rule, right? But in magic stuff, it's like, okay, now you can drink a potion and be magic? Why? What does that mean? Like, how is this working out?
I believe that. I believe that as a thing, for sure.
It's not that I don't believe it, but it seems arbitrary, and it seems like you could just add and subtract anything that you want at any time,
right. which is fine, but it
doesn't compel me. That's all.
Yeah, I think what you need is a better setup of the consequences, right? Like, that's kind of what I think you're getting at, is like, what are the stakes for this, right? Like, if he's going to do this and get his magic back, it doesn't really matter what his magic does or anything like that, right? Like, if he's going to get his magic back, there's a cost, right? And we know there is a cost. Clearly, some bad stuff happens. But the question is just like what is sort of the cost versus the what he's getting out of it, and how does that come into play here? Is this is something, you know what this reminded me of? And this is for Guy more than John. Sorry, John. There was whole Supernatural plot with Sam drinking demon blood. And giving him powers, and like
that was reasonably early too.
Yeah,
that was like season 32 something like that.
Right. Yeah.
and it's 3 or 4. Yeah, it's
3 or 4. It's pretty early, and I feel like this reminded me a lot of that, because it's that same sort of drink this thing, and you're gonna get sort of evil powers even if you're trying to use them for good reasons.
Yeah.
So.
I would love to see those guys show up on the show.
Yeah, I think
I know. I wanted them in Arrow because they're buddies with what's his face, and I think that's what I'm going to start calling him at this point. But they would make a lot more sense on this show than Arrow.
Oh, yeah.
Well, we did have that brief crossover where they found the car. So
you never know. I mean, they've moved on now. Like,
they're doing other stuff.
I don't know what Jared Padalecki's doing, but
Walker, Texas Ranger.
Oh, right.
Anyway, I think the issue at stake here is, here's my biggest thing with this episode. It's not, it's a little too much on the drama side, right? Like, the A plot is very I don't want to say straight up serious, but it's not like I think the show works best when it's irreverent, and it felt mm-hmm. like this the main plot here is just a little too conventional for this show.
They haven't earned the drama points.
Right.
And especially when he it's mixed mo too, because he walks in doing a very silly Roman Catholic priest.
Yeah.
You know, and then it's like, okay, we're trying to get dark and serious with a character, Spooner, who we don't really know.
Right.
And John, who's sort of enigmatic, but he's not harming one of our closest friends, you know? He's harming sort of a new person who didn't really take for me.
Well, and I think part of
it, the season,
it's not... Part of me wonders if that's why they took Zari 2.0 out of play temporarily, is because of the relationship between the two of them. You had someone who would essentially act as like a check, right? And she's not available, you kind of get around that. I mean, eventually that confrontation will happen, I'm sure, but it does sort of make it is a convenient way to avoid having to deal with like a serious conversation, basically, at this exact moment.
Right. Yeah. I think I would have felt better if they'd called that out. Like, he's gone off his rocker because, you know, Zari 2.0 wasn't there to keep him in check. And that would
that might have been nicer.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. I don't love the idea of her being a device for that, but it's so much as
I think
it does have to go with John's very pliable.
Yeah. I'm very pliable.
I don't mind the fact that it's about him feeling fundamentally, I think it's about him feeling powerless, right? Which is fine. Yeah. But I think it needed maybe a little more sauce on it, you know, to get it to that point of really getting of him being desperate, right? Like they kind of put him in a situation where he feels like he has no other choice, but we don't understand the stakes well enough to really see like, okay, I can understand why in this moment you would make this decision. It doesn't feel like it doesn't sell it.
So they do something similar in the comics. Well, he's dying of cancer. I mean, this was the late 80s, so I am not entirely up on Constantine these days. I have no idea what he's doing.
It's very breaking.
But yeah, you know, the late 80s run. Well, it's kind of the classic run that establishes him, right? Did he come out of Swamp Thing? Or like,
I think that's right.
Definitely connected with Swamp Thing, like during the Alan Moore days. Great run, by the way. When he's dying of cancer and he's coughing and he's trying to get his soul back. He's trying to do something because he's going to die and he knows he's screwed. So he's desperately trying to extend his life. We didn't see any of that here. Like if he was having the cold sweats from withdrawal or if there was something about his magic that was keeping him alive somehow.
Well,
turns out he's like, he can't be that old because he's like a 70s British guy. So yeah, never mind.
Well, they did that whole plot last year. Right,
yeah.
With Astra, like we did the whole he was dying and like he, you know,
right. I guess so you can't pull that one back,
right? Yeah. And I think the other aspect of it is I feel like John Constantine is a resourceful character, and so dealing with this balance of he needs magic but he's also so much of what he does is about not having to bring out the magic. Like I thought the opening scene with the banker was pretty good, right, where he's kind of got to bluff his way into you know, and that feels very John Constantine to me, is like, well, I know I'm kind of disadvantaged here, but everybody, I'm going to use the fact that my reputation is such.
Yes. Using Constantine's is actually a superpower. It's like,
right.
He's not really that juiced, but
even when he has magic, he's going up against Satan. You know, I mean, he's going up against people, you know, demons who are incredibly powerful. So it's not exactly like he's always on top because of the magic.
Yeah. No, people are scared of him, A, because of his reputation, and B, they're never quite sure what cards he's got.
Right.
Magic. Right. You know, like he's always got like a little trick or like a little something. And even when he doesn't, he can bluff it enough that people are generally give him his space, you know, like
there's
him succeed.
Some wheel and dealing and there's some, you know, like, all that stuff comes into play. And the fact that he like barters a favor and all that, like, you know, I think that felt very, and so it was a question of like, knowing how resourceful he is, was there no other way he could find his way out of that last confrontation? And like, I get it. They were trying to build there. Again, I just don't think they were necessarily entirely successful about it.
I agree. I'm not just saying that.
But Guy, would you make an opposite point so you'd agree with that next?
I think they did great. I think they did real justice to John Constantine.
I don't agree.
Oh, wow. Well,
that's how it plays out.
Do you know what? You know what's actually... You guys know that I listen to Greatest Gen, a Star Trek show podcast.
Do you like Star
One
Trek?
One of the things... we do, yeah.
It's never mentioned it before.
One of the things... did I tell you why I started mentioning it? It's because it would crack Amanda up when she was like... when we had just started our romance, and she would listen to our show. I'm like, don't do that, honey. Like, you don't have to.
I would
drop Star Trek references to crack her up, and now I just really enjoy them. Anyway, I was listening to Greatest Gen, and one of the things that they do is like whatever they are, randomly they will do an episode in a sort of a different format, and one of them is I think it's called I forget, it's based off the episode of TNG Measure of a Man, or like where Data is or not. Yeah. So they call it Measure for Man episode. And they are forced, like Riker, to either take a positive or negative opinion on the episode. So what Dan just did to me, like I would crack up if I was forced to say nice things about this particular episode and how great Constantine is, because he ain't. Like they kind of dropped it. It was a sketch enough of the character to recognize it as Constantine, but not a particularly good rendering. Do you know what I mean? It's something you may hang on your fridge because your kid drew it, but you wouldn't be like, that's a great rendering of John Constantine.
Mm-hmm.
That was a lot. I'm taking a lot of long walks because I really don't care about this app. So.
Interesting. Yes.
I think Star Trek works is just because it's a great cultural touchstone. And there's so much to compare, you know, at a seven seasons and stuff that we've watched over and over again. So it's easy to compare to.
Exactly. Yeah. Joking aside, I think it works.
Yeah.
I mean, I just saw Seth Meyer do it last night, like a weird TNG joke. So, it's common.
We're not the only ones, is what you're saying.
Well, I wish we were. But no, we have done nothing original during our entire 100 apps.
Probably true.
Am I being too negative? I feel like I'm just meandering and being negative about stuff, and I don't want to be.
After 100 episodes, you're tired.
Yeah.
Let's take a break.
God, I'm exhausted.
Put your feet up.
Yeah. Is there anything else either of you want to say about this app that's positive? Like,
I said that. I said the things that I thought were positive already.
Yeah. Okay. I think, the B plot works a little better for me than the A plot in this episode. I always love Matt Ryan, but I feel like this is not, it's just the plot kind of let him down this time around. And
I got no problem with him. The show in general. I think it's a good show. And sometimes you swing and you miss. And I'm better. I think that's one miss.
Yeah, I think that's what it comes down to. And honestly, more than anything, it's just like, they're not all going to be winners. And as we pointed out, I do think that moment where he gives his speech to Spooner about like why magic is so important to him, I think that's a great moment in an otherwise, kind of meh episode.
Yeah, I think they started with that moment and wrote out.
Yeah, this could be.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe not. Obviously.
I don't think so.
No, okay.
Well, John, I think if you really look at it, you could tell that they did sort of hinge the entire episode around that.
Okay, it's
sort
fine, of the yes, they did.
Wow. Do you know
I just wanted to end at this point.
I don't know. I don't know how many years I've been friends with John. I guess well before 2015.
Would you say you're friends with him now?
Yeah. Well, that's exactly where I'm going. I don't know anymore.
At the beginning of the episode, yeah.
Yeah. Well, you flip flop on so much stuff that I'm like, has this always been the case? And he just says stuff that makes me like him, even though he doesn't believe it.
I think it's this episode, really. Yeah. Honestly, I think it's just like it's a mediocre episode, and it's and I don't care about it too much.
Yeah. And here's the thing:
I care about the show. I really like.
Weirdly talked about it for half an hour, despite that. But
yeah, right.
I know. Well, yeah, we'll move on. But we'll move on. But one of the things I like about the show is that it does take risks, and sometimes you fall on your face. So good for them. Too bad. That's fine.
Yeah.
Still better than Arrow.
that's where we're at.
There's plenty of good Arrow that's better than this. Yeah. But,
I just mean
in aggregate, I've been enjoying this show more than Arrow.
Well, there is season one, but...
Season one's great of Arrow. Season two is amazing.
I'm talking about season one of Legends.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Sure.
Anyway, you want to do the The rating system?
Sure, I haven't done the math on all of that.
Yeah. Do you want to explain it, or are we? What are we doing here?
Do you know what?
To explain it for the very last time.
You know what? I was about to ask one of you guys to explain it, but I guess I'll do it because if it's going to be the last time, it's got to be done by the OG.
That's right.
That's me. I think that's the first time in my life I've ever said OG.
maybe it should be the last.
Old Probably. Guy. Yeah. Yeah.
Old guy.
Exactly. Oh, man, I'm feeling old today. The rating system. There are three levels. I will start at the bottom and move up. The lowest level is called an Alex, and that is based on a character from Arrow Season 4 who briefly dated Thea, the Green Arrow's younger sister, and he was boring as hell. He carried a clipboard. He was like a political consultant on a show about shooting arrows into people. So that wasn't that cool. He was just boring. He was boring. And he dies in a boring way. And like, we never hear about him again. She never grieves. Like, not even in that episode. There's nothing. He's just erased. It's like the TVA plucked him, except he's not even exciting enough. Like, nothing he possibly could have done in an entire existence in multiple timelines would have ever impacted the world in any way for the TVA to come and pluck him out of existence. That's how boring that guy is.
Wow. All right.
Next one, John Jr., originally Diggle, had a daughter, Sarah Jr., named after the Sarah in Legends. And then the Flash did Flash Barry stuff, like dating his sister. And I think it's dating his sister that made reality explode. And Sarah Jr., poor Sarah Jr., turned into John Jr., which was not cool. And yet, this is the middling rating that readers submitted to us. And their rationale was, it sucks that Sarah Jr. isn't there because we love Sarah. And we've now got John Jr., but you can't be mad at it because he's a baby. And it's like, yeah, it's that's true. It's right. not his fault.
He didn't do it. It's Barry's fault.
He didn't do it. Yeah. Stupid Barry and dating his sister. and then after that, we got Biff, named after the one and only, the amazing Biff Conklin, again from Arrow Season 4. He's a long-suffering and a capable henchman. Who did just a really, really great job, including figuring out that Ollie, the Green Arrow, was undercover, reporting it to his boss and not getting believed. And like, then he gets killed by Ollie. And then he comes back as a ghost and gets killed again.
Whoa. Like, this guy this was show so was hardworking. As your implication, this was not a good show. Where a character comes back as a ghost. I don't know what you're talking about.
No. I think it's telling that we got
the thought.
Yeah, I think it's telling that we got the rating system basically all from characters in Season 4.
Yeah, that's so true. We really rated stuff before that.
No, we didn't. We didn't bother. Yeah. And again, just if you're wondering what... I think we're honestly soliciting your opinions for rating system. You know, void where prohibited by law. One of the reasons for the rating system being so dumb, and you should know this, is that the intent isn't to actually assign anything a score or make them comparable to anything else. It's just like, how well did you succeed? Were you a Biff in that you succeeded beyond, you know, expectations of a henchman? Or are you an Alex where it's just boring as hell? That's the rating system that stands today and has stood for the past 100 episodes. It's up in the air now. Let's try something new. Wow.
Powerful.
There's a lot there.
I mean, yeah. I kind of feel like I just read poetry at the U.S. president's inauguration. I did good work today.
And a good one, too.
So is this the finale? I don't know, is that the right word? No, the send-off for the rating system? Is this our... Like, you know, it's like a 1910 steamboat and the rating system is on the boat. Sure. We're standing on the pier waving at it.
If we can't come up with something better, then okay, no.
That, yeah, well, sure. Yeah, we'd not change the sense for
I think really it's maybe it time to, right. I think it's maybe time to shake stuff up. Like, maybe the rating system changes, but we pick a Biff out of every episode. I think I just stole that from Greatest Chin. But yeah, like an honorary Biff. Like, or we have like a, you know, something that we enjoy.
Well, it's like, I mean, we've had the long running Biff. The Piper Awards. You know, we've
the
had
Piper our, Awards are like yep. long running. Yeah, we could yep. give a Biff award. Yeah. And we don't need to give one every episode. That's who cares? We can workshop this when our tens of listeners aren't.
Also, I want to just because I can't remember because we've done so many shows, but someone in the readers will remember. I feel like we started out with a Biff or an Alex, and I feel like, or Biff and not a Biff. I can't remember, but like I feel like the John Jr. thing was added later because we needed like a meh. Like
John Jr. was added later.
Yeah, because, I think that was what Guy was implying.
Okay.
Yeah, we got stuck. We couldn't, during a mating ritual. During the ritual, we couldn't figure it out. And we're like, well, we need something in the middle. And we solicited ideas.
We didn't know what to call it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. What would have been nice is if I'd noted the name of the reader down so that I could thank them sincerely for that.
That's right. Mm. Yeah.
But sorry, pal. Man. No such luck. No. Your fame is gone, lost to the ages. 15
minutes.
Yeah.
Shall we conclude this Legends recap with a rating then?
Yeah.
Let's do that.
John?
It is a John Jr. Mm-hmm. I'm tempted to put it someplace in between, but we only have three ratings. So, I mean, yeah. I might put it up. I wasn't crazy about it, but I didn't think it was particularly bad either. It just wasn't great. That's the definition of the rating. So there we go.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah. Guy?
I think a little unfairly I'm going to call this one an Alex, and I think I'm calling it an Alex.
Wow.
Well, I want to round it out. It's very rare. I want to dust it off, and I think this may well be my last opportunity to use one, so let's try this out. Like Phil Coulson with that crazy laser beam that he tries to blast Loki with. Yeah, it's an Alex. It didn't land for me. I didn't care about it. I was putting dishes away. And I think a lot of that had to do certainly with me and maybe my state of mind. But like it didn't hook me. Like there was no gag. There was no anything. It felt a little dour when I was really wanted looking, you know, a few chuckles and like some smart, thoughtful stuff. And I'm like, I got like a sort of half-assed drama, and Alex to me is half-assed drama. It's like political campaign guy. It's like, you are not on the West Wing, dude. You are boring as hell. It just so it bored me. I this show Legends is great. Generally, sometimes you swing and sometimes you miss. And sorry, this one was a miss. And you know, I just think in calling it an Alex is the most fair and honest thing to do because I legitimately get excited when I call stuff a Biff, and this didn't feel like it was close. It felt like it sort of, you know, shot the arrow in the wrong direction. It didn't just miss the mark. It was all over the place. Yeah. So.
I'm going to give this one a John Constantine Jr.
Wow.
Which is to say it's a John Jr., but Constantine's in it and I generally enjoy him. I kind of feel like, yeah, it was a episode that I checked out during, much like Guy. I feel like I just did not, I was not paying his attention. I can tell usually when I'm not enjoying something is because my attention wanders. And I'm just not as invested in what's happening in an episode. So for this one, yeah, I think for me, it was just sort of, it was meh. It wasn't bad. It had a couple good moments, but more than anything, it was just sort of like, I don't know. I'm not super into this. I assume that it might lead to things that I'm more interested in, but for the moment, I don't really feel like I'm super, you know, jazzed about it. So again, I agree. The show's great. It doesn't always have, you know, episodes that knock it out of the park every single time, but few shows do, right? Like there are not a ton of shows where you feel like every single episode just knocks it out of the park. They exist, but they're few and far between, especially when you're producing in the teens or 20 episodes a season, right?
Yeah. I mean, one of the adorable things about Star Trek is that they can stink. There's some real stinkers out there, and that's fun, ones, you know,
for sure.
Yeah, exactly. So there we are. We're kind of, middling to poor, I guess it seems like where we are on this one. But, that's where it is. All right, we're going to leave that there. And we're going to head over. It's been a while, so we have to dust off the superhero sweep.
Don't do it, John.
No, I'm not doing it.
I love that we're avoiding in-jokes from another show. I've just explained the rating system. There's
I'm not going to explain jokes from the other show.
That's not the thing that's happening. Yeah. To the superhero sweep segment, then, where we will talk about other superhero-related stuff. So I don't know where exactly you want to start, but I think the best place to start is we should talk a little bit about that one Loki WandaVision conspiracy theory that John sent us, because
yes,
I think it's interesting. And I can't decide if it's intentional or not, and I kind of love that I don't know. I'm okay with that. I'm okay with not knowing.
Right? Yeah, because as you said, it is, well, okay, we should explain what it is first, but this is a TikTok, and it's like someone talking about something that they saw on Reddit, so it's, you know, 12 layers deep.
12 steps
ahead. Who actually no, it's not that. Who actually notices in the first place, but if you go to the same point in both the last episode of both WandaVision and Loki, the He Who Remains starts looking like spooked at the same moment that Wanda starts becoming the Scarlet Witch, basically. So as she is drawing energy from Agatha, the He Who Remains is getting very nervous. And there's a close correlation between him dropping that rock. Is that what it is?
Yeah, or whatever is on his desk.
Whatever's on his desk, dropping that and Agatha falling to the ground.
Yeah, that one didn't line up quite as well for me, but it's close. Right. But the counter argument to this, of course, or the coincidence argument to this is just like, this is the nature of structure of a show, right? Like the climax comes, you know, the episodes are roughly the same length. The climax comes at roughly the same moment, right? It may just be sheer coincidence. That said, there is some argument, like textually, like in the meanings of these things, mm-hmm. that could back that up. We know that, you know, well, all right, we don't know a lot because the time travel playing with it in Loki makes it very difficult to figure out what is happening when.
Actually, you know what? Now that you say that, it doesn't make any sense.
Well, except Wanda is a Nexus.
Right. Oh, that's right. The issue.
Wanda, that's
the fix for it.
Yeah. The same, things supposedly, like, she is across all dimensions, right?
Right.
All timelines.
And there is something, I think, to do with, at least in some comic book lore, she is a threat. Because her offspring potentially could like destroy everything.
No more mutants is it? Like she's obviously
that too, but
she's terrifyingly next level.
Like, she's extremely powerful. We never have in canon, quote unquote, we never have the Nexus being, you know, mentioned. It's just that one ad that makes a joke about the Nexus, like antidepressant pills or whatever. But it's she's never called a Nexus. But the fact that they put that in there suggests that it is something that exists within the MCU, right? Like,
yeah, and I think their introduction of it in Loki, calling them Nexus events, will help underline that. Like, you're not an event. You are a person. Like, you move.
Right.
You move through time and space and reality as if you are, like, a constant Nexus event. Like,
disrupting everything. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, and I think that makes sense that if that occurs at that level. And what makes it creepier is I did cue them up and watch them together, and it is like kind of effective because you have this moment of Agatha being like, you don't know what you've just done, right? Which has a lot of resonance if your thought of like, what did you do? You just basically like set all the timelines going and like spiking everything. And we don't otherwise have a great understanding of what happens in Loki in that moment to make He Who Remains so freaked out, right? We don't know. He just talks about passing the threshold and now he doesn't know what's going to happen, but we don't know why or what the catalyst for that was.
Right.
Yeah. Except, I guess so. Like, why that moment rather than, you know,
any other?
The moment immediately before Sylvie stabs him.
Right.
You know, like right up until that blade goes into him, pretty much anything is still up for grabs, right?
Well, I mean, I mean, there's the specific moment where it's like, I don't know anything that happens beyond this point. Exactly. Why? And if the answer is because we had a Nexus being essentially come into their power and thus all bets are off.
Yeah.
Right. No matter where you are on the timeline, then that's plausible.
It also makes it look like if he's not really expecting that particular event, it makes a little bit more sense as to why he lied, I guess, about being able to know everything. Like, you know,
right.
Like he said, oh, I know everything that's going to happen. And then all of a sudden this thing that he didn't expect at all, but probably knew could happen, happens. Then he's like, oh, wait a minute. Now I really don't know what's
right.
Yeah. I thought I knew everything that was going to happen, but now actually I don't.
I was about to start my sentence with the counter.
Yes.
And go for it.
I was about to say the counter argument is, all right, despite the fact that Marvel is a very big, very well-oiled machine, having two separate production teams working on things and making them line up is not outside of the realm of possibility, but it's also a lot. because it means potentially compromising the storytelling of each of those individual things, unless you have really planned well, and I can't put that past them because they have planned a lot of very complicated stuff.
Well, so, but the argument that it's just coincidence because as stories build toward the end, things are going to happen, works both ways though, right?
Yes,
because stories do build towards an end, then you can possibly arrange things, you know, here and there in order to have things happen at the same time.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
I know I made that argument to you, I think.
Is difficult. Within the same minute or two, I find totally plausible.
And you can, in fact, do that in the editing room, right?
Sure.
Script it out and you kind of agree on what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. And then in the edit, you can like, okay, we're going to line this up.
All you got to do is you got to Benny Hill certain sections.
Right. I cannot believe that Benny Hill is such a cultural touchstone for everybody, and it is so misogynistic and broken in so many ways.
Oh, I know, it's terrible.
It's terrible, but you know, whatever. It's part of our terrible, lovable past, exactly. I guess. You know,
exactly. Yeah.
I think it gets away with it because it's just so impeccably dumb that you know, it's hard to take real offense. Anyway, I guess one of the counters to that is that. If they had done it, I think it would have been more obvious because you're putting in a lot of work, and I think they would have,
maybe
not done a match cut,
but like a flash or something.
Well,
like
you could have seen like red infecting the timelines, like Wanda's red magic style messing up. Like you could have done more stuff to underscore that,
right?
And the other thing is, it feels like a little bit like astrology to me, where it's like, okay, those things did line up.
Yeah.
But, you know, and I reached out to famed astrologist, Dr. Katie Mack.
Oh, no. You're going to get letters.
I'm going to get unfriended. And, like, not on Twitter, just in general. That's the last I'm going to hear from her. No, like it feels like astronomy, right? Where you see things and they do align and you can fill in the gaps. And I am positive that when this theory came out, everybody at Marvel, here's the thing, the Schrodinger's happiness. I mean, I get, you know what? I never thought of it like that. Yeah, it's literally Schrodinger's happiness. Like, is he happy that the cat survived or not? Like, who knows? Is that either they're like, oh, cool, they figured it out, or wow, isn't that great?
Yeah.
Because now they think we're brilliant. And having been in a bunch of, well, maybe not a bunch, but enough giant companies over time, stuff happens. And it's weird. And when you come out on top looking great, you shut your mouth. And you're like, yep, totally meant to do that. You know, it's like PB Herman when he flips off the bike and he stands up and he's like, I meant to do that. And he's like, well, cool. But I don't know if I believe it.
I think for our next 100 episodes, we should make
Pee Wee scale
Pee Wee references instead of Star Trek.
No,
I would. I would 100% do that. I would do that.
I'm out.
I think, yeah. I think that's our age distribution. I mean,
I guess.
So. Oh, I watched the show as a kid, the Pee Wee Herman's Playhouse.
Yeah, but you needed to be a little bit older.
I watched it in college.
Oh, yeah, boy, exactly. John. You needed to be a little bit older to sort of enjoy that a little bit more, I think.
Yeah, I think so, too.
It's a kid show, but it's not.
Yeah.
I would love to make Pee Wee references, but, you know.
Yeah.
I guess we'll stick to Benny Hill. I think that's like a, I think so. Yeah, I think that's an age thing. And we're about to transition into talking about Black Widow. And Dan, you did a wonderful job on the mothership. talking about, you know, the Incomparable podcast. I mean, it's what we call the mothership. Had an episode of that covered Black Widow. With a whole bunch of great guests, and it was fun. And Dan represented us, which is difficult because as three middle-aged white dudes who are straight, we have a very diverse perspective on things. So picking one of us to appear on that show was very, very difficult. But I think, Dan, you held up well.
Thank you. I try. I try to really bring all the disparate viewpoints here together. Synthesize them, really.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was tough.
Did you constantly change your opinion like I do?
Yes. Yeah. I just agree differently with everybody.
Yeah. Speaking of Schrodinger, what the hell, man?
Before we do that transition,
it's a malt super state.
I do want to mention, I think you're totally right about some of those theories in terms of, like, you know, maybe you just shut up and don't say anything. I did line up Falcon and the Winter Soldier too, just to see what's happening moment. Yeah. And it's also, if you want to read it this way, it's pretty close to the moment where Sam flies in holding Carly's body.
Oh, right.
So, like, right. I don't know, maybe everything changed then, but it is a little strange because it does feel like you have some parallel tracks here with, like, the stuff that was happening in Falcon and Winter Soldier and some of the stuff that happens in Black Widow with a very, like, grounded track compared to the sort of multiversal mythical thing. And it's going to be interesting to see how those things interplay or not going forward.
It's probably just as likely that Marvel has a formula.
Yeah.
Yes. And they're also like, true.
And your show must reach its
well, I mean, 42 minutes.
It's twist.
If you've got a 45 minute episode and you hit that the 27 minute point, you're basically two thirds of the way through the episode. So that's the beginning of Act Three. Like, you go.
Yeah, it's not even. Yeah, it's not even. Yeah, like Marvel, script, like, it's just making.
Yes. Right.
One shows. Yeah.
Right. One page of script equals 1 minute broadly. Yeah. As things progress, you know, it's not uncommon to find something on like page 3 or 5 of a script that at least introduces whatever the inciting incident's going to be. You know, that it's a common beat kind of thing in storytelling.
There is a structure. You know? Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So I guess on the one hand, I wouldn't read too much into it, but at the same time, I feel like it's as compelling an argument as any.
It's interesting.
It's fun, and you know what? It is harmless, and if you want to believe that, go for it.
Yeah.
I am very happy that this is something you can believe in that will actually not do harm to anybody. So go
there
for
it. Go.
Have all of the fun you want. Yeah.
All right. We want to talk about Black Widow a bit?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. All right.
It's our 100th. It's the 100th episode. Man. Come on.
Yeah. Go nuts.
Let's talk about everything.
Oh my God. I don't know if I had that kind of time. So this is a weird movie in some ways, just chronologically, right? Not only was it delayed because of the pandemic, and we talked about this a bit on The Incomparable, but like it's set in a, you know, what, 5 years ago for the most part?
Yeah. I originally thought, I actually, even like as the movie started, I thought it was supposed to take place after Winter Soldier, not after Civil War. So that was a little odd for me. Like, oh, wait, this is not, okay. All right. And then it starts with a flashback.
Right. Yeah, but movies must, they're self-contained, right? Like, they cannot expect you to have done your homework and knowing when it was going to start. Like, it's got to start when it's going to start, and it needs to tell you how it's going to fit into the timeline.
It's funny because that was the argument I was going to make with the conspiracy theory we were just discussing, is how much does Marvel want you to have to do the homework, right? And like, oh, well, that only makes sense if you've seen this other thing. And I think we're getting to a point where it is becoming harder and harder for Marvel to walk that line because there's so much there, and some of it, in order to do what they're doing, some of it is kind of, you do need to have seen it. It's hard to go into some of these things without having seen I mean,
and that was like, yeah, for WandaVision, I mean, this was the first time that we had to do some catch up for Karen to watch it. She really wanted to see it, but she didn't have a great grasp of who the characters were. So we had to go back and watch several movies in order to get that grounding.
But yeah, for stuff like Black Widow, where it's like the plot is largely standalone, I actually don't think it's super important to know, other than essentially just like, the Avengers have broken up, right? Like, that's kind of the only thing you kind of need to know at this point.
Mm-hmm. Well, we need to know that she's on the run. You don't even know why. Who cares? Whatever. She's a spy.
Right.
Any number of reasons she could be on the run. And you need to know that she can't call in the big guns. Like, they even, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. But it works from like a Bourne perspective, because if you've seen any of those movies, you're like, you immediately just say, oh yeah, that.
Yeah. Or as I compare it to Mission Impossible movies, it's very much like, you know, she's been disavowed, right? Like, she's gone rogue.
And from that perspective, I think, you know, just touching on that as well, it works very well as, I think the ending is pretty big, but it throughout almost all of the movie, it works great as one of those movies, right?
It's an action movie.
Like a Bourne or an Mission Impossible. Yeah.
I think it's, you know, and something else we discussed on the main show, like, just also the role of Natasha in the MCU, and the fact that even though she is kind of our first established female superhero in the MCU, she is, this is, you know, her getting a long overdue solo movie, which is, you know,
after
a point,
she's dead.
Yeah, after she's dead, a point of contention too, right? Like,
right.
Is it a too little, too late gesture, or does it still have, you know, some punches to deliver? I think it manages to do pretty well given that. And I think in best case scenario, there are strong arguments that it helps remediate some of her poor treatment earlier. I mean, not like wiping it away, but at least like turning her into a character that you have a little bit more sympathy for and a little bit more three-dimensional.
Yeah. Yeah. It's also a springboard to introduce the new Widow. I assume she's going to be the new Widow. So yeah, it feels a little weird to me. I was anticipating something a little more akin to Winter Soldier. And it was sort of halfway between that and, I don't know, maybe Iron Man 1? I don't really know. It gets a lot more explodey at the end.
Sure.
Yeah.
Although I guess in Winter Soldier, they also drop flying battleships. Yeah. So,
yeah. Right. Yeah. I mean, I think at the end, some of it gets a little bit silly for me, but I still enjoy.
It's still a comic book movie.
Yeah. It's still a comic book movie. I like the whole, I like the insights into her background, and I like the story. You know, I mean, Guy, you and I were texting about how, you know, she basically gets to punch Harvey Weinstein in the face, and that's, you know, that's fun no matter how you do it.
Yeah. There was,
and I like that.
There's no way that they did not intend that to be Harvey Weinstein. Sorry, I cut you off.
But I think they pulled it off pretty well, though. You know, and I think it's the kind of more direct message for, I don't know, feminism in a way, but just that I wish had come out of. I think Captain Marvel is a little bit more soft touch.
Than
this movie, and I wish it had been a little bit more in your face about it. And so that's, I really like that about this movie.
Yeah, Captain Marvel feels a little bit more Powerpuff Girls to me, which is not a knock, but it's very pro, like, rootin' tootin' girl power kind of vibe,
girl power, you know,
as opposed to, you know, dealing with, like, what this guy does,
Dracoff again, does. We're perfectly suited to discuss this.
As usual. Yes.
Yeah. We're accredited women now, by the way. I feel comfortable speaking for women, particularly black women. I think that would be wonderful. I think that's totally. No, and by the way, I'm underscoring the fact that we are dumb and this is not something that we should be talking about.
There's a reason that
we don't talk about Watchmen, other than to say we are not qualified to talk about Watchmen. the yeah. HBO series from a couple of years
right.
ago. It's brilliant. Right. I don't want to crack any jokes about that. I have nothing insightful or helpful to say. Please go listen to any other, including the HBO podcast that they had on it, which was really quite good. Yeah, so it's difficult to talk about this kind of stuff. On the other hand, it is a comic book movie, and that guy, you know, Russian Harvey Weinstein, I mean, that line about, what was it, like, the only resource the world has too much of for the
oh, yeah.
That was, like, yeah, about,
yeah.
about
yeah. Like, unwanted women. Young women or something, yeah.
I was like, oh, god damn it, that is hard.
Yeah.
That is hard and ruthless and disgusting, and...
Yeah.
But
Elena blows the glasses right off of him.
Yeah, it did feel yeah. like. Do you know what? That shot reminded me of Ang Lee's Hulk. Like when a guy blows yeah, up and yeah, goes right, flying. Right. Like that's a little weird. But yeah, I'm glad that she did. I think that's obviously. I think that's awesome. I think I would have liked a little bit more of an investigation into their pathos of it. And we yeah, got maybe. A little bit yeah. more of like a,
yeah,
effectively an anti-super soldier serum, MacGuffin, right? I think they pulled their punches a little bit. Because that guy was awful.
Yeah.
And I think I wanted to know a little bit more about that. On the other hand, it's Marvel, and it's not like we ever really.
Well, and I think that's like, why, right? Yeah, yeah. And I think there's only so far that they're going to go in right. any of this stuff. And I feel like this movie, I would say this movie didn't go as far as like Black Panther went.
No, the Black Panther
discussing
was bold
issues of race and inequality.
Yeah.
And I would love to see more. You know, I would love to see. Many, you know, maybe most of the movies do stuff like that, because I think that movie is you know, a top tier one in particular. And yeah. I like this movie. I think it's solid. And I don't know. I mean, are we rating it? I don't know.
Well,
I mean, it's definite. It's a definite. I'm just gonna say it's a definite bit for me. I would agree. I don't know where.
Yeah, you never want to use the word biff outside of the ritual. That's sacrilegious.
But I mean, I watched this with my wife, and she, like, seeing the first trailer that came out, she's like, "This looks awful. I don't want to see it." And I was like, "Well, I'll still watch it." And then the second trailer, she's like, "Okay, I'm kind of interested now." And then we watched it, and she's like, "I loved it." And I was like, "Wow, I did not expect that strong." Because she's pretty into Marvel movies. Like, we watched all the TV shows and everything, and like, you know, there are times it's tricky with her, because sometimes like you got to be in like a mood for it, and then she gets like really into it. And so with this one, I was surprised how strongly she reacted to it and how much she just really enjoyed it. And I think it came to, I don't want to chalk it up purely to having a female protagonist, because I think that it's not just as superficial as that. I think a lot of it is the stuff that worked is, you know, the found family stuff worked very well. Yes. Great supporting cast. I think especially
it's fairly funny. It's fairly
funny. That's exactly what works is for her. She likes the stuff that doesn't take itself too seriously. And the Florence Pugh's character, especially with the mocking of Scarlett Johansson, I think that puts it over the edge for her. She thought it was great.
This is a perfect opportunity to bring up the best piece of physical acting in this movie is when she lands in the base in the floating red room. And she does the move, and when she stands up, she does this weird little like joyful shutter. Like almost like a little dance, like woo, like I had a little bit of fun there. And it's just so cute and adorable while she's making fun of herself. That movement is such an acting choice, and I love it, and I think that's what makes the scene work. She's cracking wise, but her whole body is making that joke, and it's great.
But there's also just like a whole bunch of, I mean, there's the stuff between the whole family, but also just like her talking about her vest.
Yes, the vest stuff is great.
The vest was great.
And she loves Nat so much that she gives her.
It's got so many pockets.
Yeah.
Yeah, she gives her big sister the vest. That's
awesome. And the vest shows up in Infinity War and Endgame, which was pointed out elsewhere.
Yeah,
I figured it must have. I didn't go back and look, but I thought, oh, that must be.
Yeah, she's wearing it in the train station or wherever they are when they fight.
And people
bad guy A and bad guy B.
People are arguing also that like you know, the there's an element to her like dyeing her hair blonde that's kind of an homage to her. And yeah. I don't know. There's a lot of there's a lot of headcanon you can do with this too. So, you know, take from that what you will. But I think it slots nicely in such a way that if you watch this where it was attempted, you know, intended to land and then continued chronologically through the series, I think it would fit in pretty well. And like it would it slotted in that way would provide more character development for Natasha, right? Like
I think that would have been a better place for it.
Did you guys half expect a like a half baked super soldier reveal for Natasha?
No, I don't think I ever really.
Well, because when she's on that chimney stack and they set it free and like the, you know, the Red Room assassin, the widow, falls and breaks a leg. Nat ends up falling like she pinballs she, down that.
Yeah.
And then she just stands up.
Like, very akin, like, akin to what Captain America does in Winter when he gets hit by a bomb by Crossbones and then falls out of the window in Civil War.
She, there is a number of times in this movie where she gets like, you're dead. You're just dead.
Yeah. Well, I felt it,
which is fine. I She's a superhero. I don't care.
But I thought it was not too far off from like Tom Cruise taking his spills in various movies. And like, you know, they show that it does take a toll on her, but it's not the toll that it would take on any of us because we're not main characters in a superhero movie.
Right. No, I'd be totally fine.
Also just not in as good a shape as she is.
Just
as
totally
as Scarlett Johansson
totally reminded me of a random story when I was driving cross country years ago and we stopped I was driving with two friends and we stopped at the house of a third friend of mine, a friend from college who was at med school, and we were, you know, hanging out at his apartment, and he lived in Chicago in this, you know, three-story house basically, and we're out on his balcony. I don't remember why we're talking about this, but you know, we're stupid 22-year-old kids and we're sitting there going, looking it down, and he's like, you know, I feel like you jump off that, you probably break both your legs, right? And my friend, who was also the best man in my wedding, who was just supremely confident, just goes, I think I'd make it. We're all like, it's physics. You would just break your legs. Like, there's not, confidence does not help you when you're falling off three stories, right?
I've met that guy, and I did not think he was that dumb, but you know.
He is a doctor. Let me be clear. He is a doctor.
Yeah. He seemed like a smart, you know, somebody in that would some be fr- ways, that you would be friends with, you know? Yeah. That's awesome.
Anyway, I feel like you can let a lot go in the superhero genre because that, I mean, I feel like the fight on the bridge has a similar thing. It's like, I feel
she goes flying off. Like, guess what? Jumping off of the pleat. Gets dark. Don't do it. She goes flying, like, you know, I don't know why her picking up a backpack and jumping off a floating helicarrier, a heli base, doesn't tweak me the same way as like falling off of a building. I think it's because I have a mental model of how bust up I would be if I felt like that. And I have no mental model for, like, you know, jumping out and having a flying battle with a cyborg super soldier. Like, that's not
The only thing that bothers me about that part is just that there just happens to be a backpack, you know, a parachute right there.
Why is
right
there a parachute
where she needs one when things are like flying all over the place?
If you have a floating secret laboratory, you have parachutes everywhere. That's just
safe. Yeah, but do you just leave them lying on the tarmac?
Like, yeah, right.
I assumed it fell out of a helicopter or something.
Yeah, well, yeah. Okay. I mean, I was fine. It was
in the right spot.
But it was right into, like we were just saying previously about script writing, like, after a certain number of pages, you're like, we're going to resolve this. And, you know, the brakes are off. Who cares? Things are going to happen fast enough that when you watch it, nobody's going to worry about where did the parachute come from. Except, you know.
Except you.
Most.
Yes.
Well, yeah. Like, a bunch of that didn't make a lot of sense.
But,
you guys, you go ahead.
No, nothing. That's it. I still enjoy it.
Yeah, whatever. Who cares? You guys discussed Taskmaster on the main show.
Yeah, we did.
I was curious. I guess, John, what did you think about that character?
I thought it worked pretty well. I mean, I was glad it wasn't like, oh, it's, you know, famous actor. Because I think that
was semi-famous actor.
Well, yeah, okay, but still. I mean, like, not like, I mean, in the comic books, well, actually, I don't know, but I, at least the comic it's books just, that I've read, it's a dude, right?
Yeah, it's just like the helmet comes off and it's like De Niro.
Yeah.
Man, do you know what? That really he moves well for something. His age.
Yeah, I would really, love that. I, honestly, really if be. That helmet came off and it was Martin Scorsese, I would have been so happy.
Little Marty?
Little Marty, yeah. Especially, like, he gave the MCU so much crap. I would love if they just, if they started cameoing Martin Scorsese now that Stan Lee has, rest in peace, has passed on. I would love it if they just put Martin Scorsese in everything. That would be awesome.
Sure. Yeah. Why not?
Yeah, I think I like, you know, we talked a lot about this in the Mush episode. I like the idea of that character in so far as having her need to confront all the people that she has just, I don't want to use quite the term abandoned, but like run away from or, you know, whatever. Yeah. And there's a element of that. It just felt like they didn't quite manage to deliver on making it more than like a couple cool fights. But I like the story of the daughter. I thought that was fine. I just, again, the process of elimination of people, like, because I saw the opening credits where they listed a particular actress and I knew that actress and was like, that actress has not yet appeared. Therefore, that actress is the only person who is available to be in the suit. With the economy of characters, there's a very limited number of people that we have met. You can't just have it be some random character. Right. That makes no sense. So it's got to be someone we've met. And like, you know, it was either going to be the daughter or it was going to be Mephisto. Those were the options.
I figured it was going to be a woman just based on... It's going to be a woman.
Yeah.
Like, it would figure
a little bit more.
Before the movie started, just watching like trailers, I was like, yeah, okay, that's it's a woman. Because of course.
I do like the fact though that that is a plot point that came up in Winter Soldier. You know, that is something that Secretary Pierce says to her. It's Loki
the original Avenger.
Yeah, Loki says her.
Although I would believe you that Pierce would have said that, you know, when she's got him and he's telling her about like exposing all of her secrets. My headcanon is that Clint did not know that Nat was using the presence of the daughter.
Yeah,
I assume the thing.
Yeah. I think that's probably true.
I think that's something she kept from him. Because she's still evil, but she's trying to move. Were you guys expecting a little bit more of a story? Well, I guess he wasn't cast, so...
Oh, with
Clint? And I think maybe if they'd done a story with her and Clint back in Budapest, that would have robbed her of a story of her own in a way.
I thought they threw in the cameo of the that one scene where
he's got a voice.
His voice.
Right? Well, I was thinking it wasn't even that. And was that specifically his voice? I couldn't tell.
I think so.
Okay.
I thought so, yeah.
I thought it was just a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent of some variety.
I mean, I figure they pay that guy enough money that it's like, hey, can you do like five line readings of this?
He calls her Nat. He calls her Nat. Okay. So it's not just...
But I was thinking of the scene where they're in the safe house and Yelena asks, like, what kind of gun makes those? And she says, no, those are arrow holes. I assume that was from her fighting with Clint maybe before getting recruited. That was kind of how I read it.
Yeah, like my headcanon is that he's sent to take out Dracov.
He was sent to take out her, right?
Well, taking out her as step one to get to, you know, like capture her, interrogate, get to Dracov, like go do it. And then when he manages to capture her and interrogate her or whatever, he turns her. And then they go and take out Dracov. We don't, obviously, we don't know.
Something like that.
But something akin to that. Like, it's like, okay, I'm going to treat you as an enemy and use you to get to my next target up the hill. But somewhere in there, he ended up thinking she was not that bad, which is cool. We still haven't seen that story, though.
But do we need to? I'm not sure we do.
I don't think I want to. Like, I didn't need to see Vader pod racing. In my head, it was
Vader in the armor pod racing. I was like, I actually kind of do want to see that.
He would not be bothered. They could do it
in the Kenobi series.
I would watch that. I am going to watch that anyways.
You would watch the Kenobi series?
No matter what.
Just to plug something else, Dan and our pal Tony, the dean of Batman U, do a podcast about the Bad Batch, which is good.
Thank you. Thank you.
Well, you never plug it. I don't know. It's
not,
a pretty
I
good
know.
Show.
I'm not. Yeah. I'm not a plugger. I'm not.
Well, here's the thing. I know you're not a plugger, but at the end of that show, you encourage people to be members of the Incomparable, and you never do it on this show. And I'm like, why are you doing that on the show?
I don't want to drive people away. That's why.
Okay.
It all comes out on the 100th episode.
I'm trying not to get people. Yeah, I'm not trying.
The
not
gloves
to get
are off right now
to pull their memberships. Realizing this show is what they're getting. Rewinding back to the part with Hawkeye and stuff, and thinking, I read a bunch of stories about how they had discussed, and you know, the stories always blow these out of proportion in their headlines, but they're like, oh, they cut a cameo from so-and-so. I was like, no, there was a discussion of putting one in the script, never made it as far as production, all right? Of having, you know, Tony or Steve show up or something like that. And the director's, you know, standpoint was like, no, she doesn't need the boys, right? Like, she doesn't need the guys to be there. Yeah. It would pull the focus away from her. And I think 100% right decision on that front.
Entirely.
And thus, having Clint appear in voice only is fine, and not going into their story, also fine. If you wanted to do that, if you felt like, oh, man, this was successful, we want to do another Black Widow 2 that's a flashback to her and, you know, her origin story with Barton. All right, fine, whatever. Like, you can do a flashback. That doesn't bother me. Like, you could do a, you know, a short series or a movie that was covering that story if you really wanted to, but you don't have to. It's fine either way.
Yeah, I don't think that's required. One thing I was sort of not so happy with I was going to say the chameleon, Taskmaster. Villains that don't speak can be cool, but they can't be the major thing, right? Vader's intimidating because he speaks. Boba Fett in the original things is cool because he doesn't, but he's a minor role, right? Like, you're left to wonder about him. Taskmaster is sort of like a faceless, I'm about to say mindless. You know, like,
it comes out that way at the beginning because they're like jacking things into the back of her head.
Right. It's like there's like an autonomy. There's certainly a question of autonomy or her autonomy. Right. I mean, she's robbed of it. And that works as like a plot point, but it doesn't help us understand the conflict going on here, right? I got more pathos out of the widow who broke her leg and then was forced to shoot herself in the head, than Taskmaster, and I think that's a shame. The flip side of that is they picked a beautiful actress, and the only time you see her, she's got burns on her face, which doesn't make her empirically less beautiful or not, but they pick somebody known for their face and their looks in general, and gave her very little to do, and even sort of gave her a bunch of prosthetics in order to change her appearance. A bit of a weird choice.
I agree with you, I felt kind of
the same way, like when they put Lupita Nyong'o as I don't know, that little arms Yoda. What's the name?
Maz.
Maz.
I like her. Her voice is great.
Yeah, it's just like, man, I would love to see a little bit more Lupita Nyong'o. She's awesome. Like,
but she can, do whatever role she wants to do, I guess. I mean, that's the question. It's like, I think in this case, I agree with you 100%. Giving her this role where she only appears in a couple scenes and she has basically no lines is a little odd, but there's not, the arc is so compressed too, right? Because the reveal and then we have a redemption.
I think that's the problem, right? Is there isn't enough time to really get into that whole thing. It's revealed toward the end to make him seem worse.
Right.
Yeah.
Like he's not only has he done this to all these girls from, you know, that he's like stolen from people or, you know, bought from people. He's also doing it to his own daughter.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is maybe like a roundabout way of like having those people be like, as a father of a daughter, I don't think sexism is great. It's like, well, did you need to be the father of a daughter? Because that's weird. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think, yeah. Well, it's interesting. I have big questions about where we see the rest of the widows, including Antonia, go from there. Because it seems like those characters are not done.
No.
We have the tag, which shows us that Yelena is working with the Contessa. So, and is basically, she's pointed at Hawkeye. And so I believe it's already been confirmed that Florence Pugh will appear in the Hawkeye series. Yeah. That's going to be later this year.
Yeah.
But we don't know what happens with the rest of those characters. But I feel like you can't let loose like a dozen trained assassins and not have it make some waves somewhere, right? It's not like they're going to go like, oh, well, I'm free. I guess I'll just go and, you know, open a coffee shop or...
Yeah, that's like at least a cool baker's dozen worth of like super soldiers equivalents right there. Like not...
Right. Why was that
maybe
not
they
the
can't
problem.
Lift a truck, but... Yeah.
Yeah, why was that not the problem that Sam and Bucky were sent to deal with, right?
Like, right. That's... I mean, maybe they're just like chilled out. I mean,
it's like too, yeah.
It did not appear that any of them wanted to be living the life that they
were
living.
That's fair.
The thing that did that to them has been destroyed by their sisters, not their biological sisters, but their, you know, those sisters in suffering there. Go and have a good life. You know, for all we know, Nat calls up Tony and she's like, okay, Tony, you're going to put up these 17 women for life. And he's like, okay, fine. Yeah. Fine. You know, not a big deal. Maybe she calls up Bezos. Who knows? Maybe.
Again, wrong show.
Yeah. Well, I mean, now that Lex isn't here, we can talk freely about I liked it. Did you guys feel that Captain Russia was a little underused?
No, I thought he was pretty good.
No, in this movie, I thought he was perfectly well used, actually.
I love David Harbour.
They could have done a lot more. I think he did a great job. I think I really enjoyed him. And, you know, it's more of a movie about the women. So
yeah.
he's there, you know, to basically to be shown to be the idiot that he is. He does it very well.
Yeah, I said underused. It's not that I wanted more screen time for him. I guess I wanted to see him be a little bit more crunchy, like do something weirdly impressive. But whatever, who cares? You're right. It only would have detracted from the women.
Yeah.
By the way, severing your what? That is nerve. The dumbest possible.
I enjoyed it a lot about I knew she was trying to get him to punch her in the face, and I enjoyed that it was going to be the sort of like self-inflicted, let's deal with this, but yeah, the logic of that makes zero sense.
Do it.
Yeah.
Do it first with the doctor that can mind control pigs.
Right.
Have the doctor that can mind control pigs mess up with that nerve in such a way that
then we wouldn't get to see it though, right? She would have to have been acting the whole time.
Yeah. It just didn't make sense, man.
No, I agree.
Yeah, it's not, wouldn't get to see it, but
it's a little silly. But I thought it's fine.
It's fine. Yeah, for a movie stuff, I think it's fine. I mean, it's a shorthand that you've kind of seen in other things before. Yeah.
You're going to need to lose your sense of smell, so contract COVID in the next 30 minutes, right. And you'll be fine. I also wanted to add, this is the I just mentioned they did not disclose beforehand the character that I think his name is O.T. Faganbili was playing, who is Rick Mason, who I guess is a character from the comic books, who's just kind of like a super spy slash fixer. I like that character. He does not have a lot of backstory or anything, but I kind of enjoyed that. He's just like the guy who shows up and has a lot of like connections Rick for you Mason, and then goes away.
Really?
Yeah.
Did you?
You don't,
I did not get particularly romantic vibes from that, but.
No, I thought he flirted with her a little bit, but it wasn't really like.
Nat is constantly, I don't know, like Nat flirts with people. It's just kind of her thing. Like not in a. Not in a come hither kind of sense, but like she just, you know, it's sort of the nature of her when she's chatting with people that are not trying to kill her. I liked him. It was a weird, curious addition, and I kind of liked that he was a little bit like the Miss Moneypenny to her James Bond.
Yeah. Right. I didn't mind at all that we didn't really know. I wish the one thing I was like, I can't remember if they even ever said his name. I assume they did at some point, but like, I totally missed it if they did. Because I kept going like, does this guy even have a name? Like,
well, I think he did on the IMDb page, but I.
Oh, yeah, it's definitely he's credited as Mason. And I saw several other places refer to him as Rick Mason. And Rick Mason is a Marvel's character that the backstory kind of fits. So I assume he's the MCU version of that character. But again, it's not that important. He's just the guy who shows up. And I could imagine he might show up again if, you know, we get a future Black Widow movie starring Florence Pugh or a series or something.
Yeah. Or Hawkeye or whatever.
Yeah,
like, we need a guy to bring us a Quinjet for some reason. Like, we'll just bring him in.
Anyways, enjoyed that. I enjoyed David Harbour. I love Rachel Weisz. I've always loved Rachel Weisz. She can do no wrong.
I have a real I think Rachel Weisz may be the genesis of my love for Sarah and... Rachel Weisz in The Mummy is amazing. The Mummy just all around is just...
It's a great movie.
You know what? I'm going to call it right now. That's a superhero movie. It's so great. Mm. Yeah. Mm. It's really fun.
Anyways, she's fun in this. She doesn't get a whole lot, but what she gets, I think she does. She executes very well. So overall, I was a big fan. This is the fundamental thing that it comes down to me with any Marvel movie. Every time I feel like they come out, people are like, no, I don't know. And I'm like, really? They've done 20 movies. I feel like you could grade almost all of them at the very least like a 3 out of 5. So they have earned the rights to feel like I feel good about a Marvel movie going in because they've delivered. They've done this time and time again. It's not like it's a fluke, right? So I was pretty confident I would enjoy this movie. I was not surprised by how much I enjoyed it, but I was glad that I enjoyed it.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, I mean, it I'm trying to phrase this in a way that won't send off any triggers.
Who cares? You're going to change your opinion 2 seconds anyway.
No,
it's fine.
No. What I mean, it has been some time since we'd seen a movie.
It didn't hurt either.
It was, it was good.
Yeah. And
wait, no, can you expand on that a bit? Because I feel like he wanted to say something meaningful.
No, I was trying not to say it's been a while.
Yeah, I know. I knew where you were going.
Okay.
Yeah, I know.
I want to, I don't think that Scarlett Johansson has always been the top rung of performers. I think she is she's a perfectly good actress. Like, and some of it is,
I think she can be very good.
Yeah. I'm not sure this is the character that has the depth you need for that, I think
particularly
she,
the way it's traditionally been.
Yeah. I think she has done a fine job.
And this movie asks her to
character.
Be the straight man.
Yes.
Straight
exactly.
woman, I guess. Like she has to be the one that's like, no, this is who I am. And everybody else gets to be a goofball around her.
Yeah. Right. Right. Yeah. And I think she does very well at carrying that. In the same way that any of the other leads have carried their movies, frankly. So it's a little rough because having seen this and then having her killed feels more like I kind of wish we had more time with this, like knowing all this stuff about her. Now we have more time with this character, but better late than never, I guess.
I think this should have come out right after Civil War.
Yes. If not earlier, I mean, you know, they went.
I mean,
at
I think
least
they were
two
told
Avengers
a different story
before this, right? And
well,
Steve
sure. yeah,
and
but
Tony
I mean,
got
I mean,
three
could,
movies.
What
apiece.
I mean is, you could, you know, if you could go back in time with the reel of this movie, you could put it right there, and that would be great.
Oh yeah, I would even argue if you go back in time, you would have done this. Would have been like Black Widow 2 or something, right? Like they would have done they could have done the Clinton Natasha story early on or something, or the origin story or whatever, and then had I don't know. Anyways.
Yeah, I think that, that
sadly, we cannot go back and do that. My understanding is I've learned from John Maltz is that's the way time works.
What, from Maltz?
So many references to the other show.
I'm so far behind.
Yeah. That's fine. All right.
Well, you never have me on anymore because, you know.
Funny that you say that.
Oh, really?
Stay on the line afterwards.
Okay. All right. Well, we've covered Black Widow. Before we go... I don't know. There were a handful of other like casting news pieces. I don't know how much we want to spend time on those, but.
And Dan, did you see the Loki making of yet?
I have not watched it yet. It's on my list.
I have not either. Right. Yeah. Okay. Maybe we'll save that for next week. I mean, we're an hour and a half
in. Let's do that next week. So.
Yeah. Yeah. But we'll talk about there's some casting news. We can talk about that next week. None of it is pressing since nothing's going to air anytime soon. Right, and we've already eaten up an hour and a half of our listeners' valuable times. So we should just conclude this 100th episode by, you know, sitting down, eating some shawarma, staring off in the distance. I think is the only appropriate option, really. Readers, thank you so much for following along with us for 100 episodes. It's been fantastic. We'll see you back here for episode 101. Yeah, as I was reminded by my colleagues, I should plug more things on this show. So, of course, please do go check out the t-shirts at cottonbureau.com. Search for Biffcast. Lots of great Loki t-shirts. I'm sure we'll get Moltz on the train to making some like what if t-shirts or Hawkeye t-shirts later this year. So, you know, we gotta keep his addiction going. And of course, you know, we would really appreciate it if you would go sign up for a Incomparable membership. If you're not a member already, you can go over to theincomparable.com/members. The membership plan started at just $5 a month, and you get access to all sorts of great stuff, including bootleg tracks of the shows before they get edited, bonus episodes that don't get aired in public, full-length commentary tracks over at Not Playing, some D&D stuff for Total Party Kill, access to the member Slack. It just goes on and on. There's a ton of great stuff. And also, you know, hey, it's been 100 episodes. If you feel like maybe we've proved our worth now, go leave us a review over in iTunes. It would be really appreciated because, you know, that's how more people find the show. But we appreciate everything that you've done, spreading the word, sending us letters, which you can continue to send us at BiffCast or at biff@theincomparable.com, and just listening and enjoying it. And of course, I need to thank my compatriots, my members of original Team Arrow all the way through our adjacent membership to the Black Widow Club. I feel like maybe just the Black Widow fan club or something.
Do not associate us with the Black Widow Club.
Okay, fair enough. The reclaimed Black Widow fan club.
Sure.
John Moltz, thank you so much for doing this for 100 episodes.
Oh, man, it only feels like 87 at most.
God knows. Don't look a day over 87. Guy English, thank you so much for spending 100 episodes
with
us.
Danny just stole the joke I was going to use to insult John, and I'm so happy for you. I'm so happy that after 100 of these, like, we're meshing together enough.
Jokes.
That, we can just dispatch you to another show, and like, whatever. It's like, it's fine. He's going to say exactly what I would say. I honestly do want to thank the readers. We get emails, and they're always delightful. I don't know how we did it, but everybody that sort of reaches out to us seems really wonderful. And that's really nice to know that people are enjoying these things. We've sort of made a positive attitude Oh, wait. Sorry. Is your driving here, Dan? Is your driving? You got to go. You got your next case coming up.
That's our turn. It's a wacky morning show now.
Anyway, readers, man, I was legitimately trying to be nice. I'm glad that everybody seems lovely. Everybody seems lovely, and that's really nice. It's nice to know that, you know, three goofballs get together and have a good time each week. And honestly, you know, especially over the past year and a half, I think that this is, I'll speak for myself, that this has really helped me sort of connect to people outside of my immediate circle and have more fun and a good time and a good excuse to be a dummy and talk about silly superhero stuff each week. So, you know, thanks. You guys are great. You're great friends, and you do a lot of work on this, and I really appreciate it. And thanks to everybody who reads along and sends us letters.
You're all Biffs in our hearts.
You're all Biffs. Everybody's a Biff. Yeah, except Alex. Right.
Well, that is episode 100, but as I said, we'll be back for episode 101, so don't fret. And that will be next week, so we'll see you then. Gotta put it in for the 100th episode.